WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. What if we could block a protein to stop runaway cell division? Dana-Farber laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. As you may have heard, the New York City Department of Education is launching a pilot program aimed at creating diversity at 7 elementary schools in Manhattan and Brooklyn this fall. The plan comes after months of pressure from elected officials who were prompted to diversify the city's schools after a UCLA report was released last year that found New York City schools are the most segregated in the nation. The issue has become a particularly hot topic in recent months, which we've covered on the show, with a controversial rezoning proposal in the downtown Brooklyn area that would shift families living in Dumbo and Vinegar Hill out of the zone for PS8. In Brooklyn Heights and into the zone for PS307 near the Farragut houses. WNYC's education reporter Yasmin Khan will update us on the latest developments in that story as part of the conversation that we're about to have. Hi, Yas.
Hello.
And I know there was just a plan rescinded for a similar thing on the Upper West Side.
That's right.
Involving PS199 and some other schools. Also with us to discuss the new diversity pilot program are Julia Zuckerman, the principal of the Castle Bridge School, that's PS 513 in Washington Heights, and Crystal Williams, parent coordinator at the school. So, Principal Zuckerman, welcome.
Thank you.
And Ms. Williams, thank you so much for coming to our studio.
Thank you.
And let's turn to you first. Principal, how does this pilot program work, and is the aim, the word of I'm seeing here is diversified, but is this about desegregation in New York City?
Well, it is for me. We can call it whatever we want. The way that it's going to work for us is that our lottery will now pull out 60%, at least 60% kids with free and reduced lunch, and we'll also set aside the 10% of our seats that we have already set aside for kids with an incarcerated parent.
What's the population like of your school now demographically?
Demographically, it's similar to what we want, but it's not easy to keep it that way. So right now we're 50% Latino. We're a dual language school, Spanish and English, so we have to be 50% Spanish-speaking. As first language. And the other 50% is split evenly amongst African-American, mixed, and white.
And the area is gentrifying, and so the goal here is to keep the degree of diversity that you have now that you just described?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So, Yasmin Khan, describe to everybody where this fits in to the larger city effort. What's new here?
This is pretty new and a pretty big step for Chancellor Farina, who in the past has not, you know, she has talked about diversity in the sense of saying that diversity comes in many forms. I think she even said it on this show that it's, you know, diversity in the schools is not just about ethnic and racial diversity. It's about different types of learners, English language learners and students with disabilities. And I think that people have felt like she has not come out strong enough on coming up with policies and plans to really to integrate the schools, because the schools are racially segregated. So these seven schools that got these diversity plans asked for them. They applied for them to the Department of Education more than a year ago. So they've been waiting. And, you know, it was announced last Friday, a little over a week ago, I guess, that that they would be able to apply these changes for the upcoming kindergarten admissions. And this is a big step. Even though it's only 7 schools, the chancellor has said that she wants us to be a model for the city. So we'll see.
Ms. Williams, for people who don't know the role of parent coordinator, you're a full-time employee of the school, right? That's a DOE job.
Yes.
And you work kind of on behalf of the school with the parents. And I've had, in my own experience as a public school parent, some really great parent coordinators who also worked with parents to represent them to the school. So how does this new diversity plan affect your job, and what does it mean? What does it look like from where you sit?
I think I'll continue doing what I'm doing. I make every effort at open house, when we have our open houses, to connect with families, and I do a lot of outreach outside of the school. I'm always looking for families that are going to help us with having a more diverse school.
In the South Bronx's District 7, students have created a project called Integrate NYC for Me to push for student-led solutions to segregation. District 7 is almost exclusively Black and Latino and therefore not very diverse, but students have collaborated with peers in largely white and wealthier District 2 and other students in Central Brooklyn's District 22. Familiar with that? That's a different approach.
That's a different approach. My colleague Beth Furtick has been reporting on that, actually. But this is just emblematic of how people are asking for these changes. And students feel it. They want to be going to school in diverse environments. Principals want to lead schools that have diverse classrooms because, as one principal of these, one of these 7 principals told me, it makes a huge difference in the kind of learner that you become. Maybe having a diverse environment in the classroom is not going to show up on your scores on a state test. It could. Maybe we're not going to be able to track it that way, but in terms of being able to teach children how to interact with all types of people, how to, building those skills of empathy and communication, it's huge. It is significant that principals have asked for this, and I think that, going forward, maybe more schools will pipe up and ask for more changes. And I think even if the city doesn't come up with its own policy, set of, district-wide or city-wide policies, my feeling that the sense I've been getting from school leaders is that they at least just want the city to get out of their way so that they can do what they want to do in their own school setting.
Listeners, you want to chime in on this? What do you want as a parent? If you're an educator who's off today or maybe on your prep period, I know we have teachers call in on their prep period sometimes, weigh in or ask a question of our guests on the New York City Department of Education's new diversity or desegregation plan and experiment in 7 schools. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Kylie in Montclair. You're on WNYC. Hello, Kylie.
Hi. I'm so happy that you all are having this conversation, and I definitely commend the city for this this pilot. My question is, I'm drawing from my experience here in Montclair, where we have a magnet program to make sure that we have integrated schools, that historically parents have used a variety of tools to separate their kids once they want them separate. And so my question is, once the schools are integrated or have diversity, the levels of diversity that you'd like, how does this plan ensure that that diversity extends to the classroom?
So if...
Principal Zuckerman,
yes.
Go ahead.
If we have a diverse group of kids in the school, then the classrooms become diverse just by virtue of that, as long as you don't have something like specific programs that are targeted to particular groups.
Kind of tracking within the
right.
classroom.
But that's usually, but history would show us that that's usually what happens. So even when you have diverse schools, like, for example, the Montclair Public School System, you have diverse schools, but the classrooms are still very racialized.
Well, are you avoiding that currently? At PS 513, or is that an issue that you feel like you've had to confront?
We haven't. I can understand that. I personally did not send my children to schools that were tracked. But And in our school, every class is dual language, every class is inclusive. So the mix in the class, every class is heterogeneous.
Sam, calling from Staten Island, says he wrote an opposition piece for the Daily News. Sam, you're on WNYC, and forgive me, I'm not familiar with it. Did you write an opposition piece to this diversity experiment from the DOE?
Yes, good morning, Brian. Thanks for letting me speak. The Daily News had contacted me. I'm also the vice president of the New York City Parents Union. And while we don't really have a problem with the diversity program in itself and what its intentions are, what we were shocked and horrified about is the labeling that the Department of Education is doing with these students. These students have been singled out and labeled in the program, or at least in the Daily News article, as English learners, children whose parents are incarcerated, and children involved in the welfare system. So we just thought that that was rather shocking that the Department of Education would label students and put them into an environment where, you know, those labels didn't exist or weren't exist, but they're being targeted because of those specific things.
And your concern is that it disadvantages those students who get those labels? Because the idea is, I think, to make sure that those students who get those labels are not segregated.
Well, so, when we talk about segregation, that's a few different things. It's just shocking that the Department of Education would come up and label students, you know, using those particular guidelines and make that labeling public. As far as the diversity is concerned, I know about the UCLA report, and it wasn't really segregation, at least in our opinion, that our schools are segregated. We are, or at least racially, we feel that our schools are segregated economically, and people can only afford to live in certain communities, and those communities have certain types of schools. And if these children were selected to come from schools that weren't working, then I can understand putting them into these programs. But if the school wasn't working, why aren't they moving the entire school?
All right.
As far as diversity in the classroom is concerned, the last point I'd like to make is, why don't we diversify the teaching staff and give these children some mentors they can look to? The teaching staff of New York City Public Schools is predominantly white. So if you would really like to create diversity in the public school system and work with minority children and give them something to work with, why don't you give them someone to look up to?
Sam, thank you very much. You put a lot on the table. Yasmin Khan, WNYC education reporter, let me turn to you first for some clarity on this.
Right.
Why, in the DOE's opinion, did they create these particular labels? These are new to a lot of people.
Right.
You're
going
to put children with incarcerated parents in certain schools as an identified group now, children with parents on welfare programs. Why those things?
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, I'd be interested to hear how it's going to work at the Castle Bridge School. Children are not going to walk in with these labels into the classroom. The city cannot diversify schools based on race. They can't use race as a factor in admissions. So for these targeted admissions, they have to use socioeconomic status, which means students who qualify for free or reduced price lunch. They use different types of learners, so English language learners, children in the child welfare system. For the record, the city is not moving anyone either in these cases. Well, in all cases, I would assume. But for these seven schools, first of all, six of the seven schools are lottery schools. So all of the families are opting in anyway. And even for the seventh school that's a neighborhood school, it just means that they have the ability to set aside a certain number of seats or give priority to students who, you know, fall into one of these categories.
Principal Zuckerman or Parent Coordinator Williams, how do you see these categories and the usefulness of these categories?
Well, I don't see the categories as being new.
No.
We have to report on English language learners all the time, kids with free and reduced lunch. These are all categories that are out there already. The only school involved here that's taking kids in particular, setting aside seats for children with incarcerated parents, is ours. And this is a group that has certain needs for support and hasn't been identified before. And as Yasmin was saying, no one's coming in with a label hanging around their necks.
Do you want to expand on that?
I was just going to say that we started out 4 years ago. That was one of the things that
made our school sort of special is that we put aside 10% of our seats for children impacted by incarceration. So for it's nothing new for us.
And so for you as a parent coordinator, if the parents are in prison, how does that affect your job?
It depends on the circumstances. Sometimes children don't even know that their parents are, you know, sometimes they think their parents are away at college or working. So we work with the families to find a way to tell children, you know, the information that they need at the right time. It can be difficult because there's a shame factor that's a part of that piece.
And as a surrogate for race, if I understand the explanation, because constitutionally you can't use race to desegregate schools, that's ironic, but you can use these other factors that are surrogates of race?
Right.
That's what's happening?
Yeah. I've worked in other schools. Every school has a child that's impacted by incarceration. Every school has, you know, children that English is not their first language. You know, it's hard and it's a little frustrating.
Do either of you from the school want to talk about what you think the student population gets from ensuring a certain amount of diversity or integration or desegregation or use any of these words? Do children in, you know, lower income families get something and children in higher income families get something else? Or in your dual language school, the 50% who are Spanish language first and the 50% who are English language first, do they get something in particular from each other? Or, you know, if all schools are getting equal resources, why does it matter who's in the other seats, hypothetically?
Well, I mean, we're all learning how to speak across boundaries, and whether the boundary is a language boundary or the boundary of cultural associations, kids come in with many different sets of expectations, and learning how to speak to each other is significant. I think that we see in the Congress right now, we've got a bunch of people who were supposedly successful in school but don't know how to talk outside of their own particular niche. This is a problem, and it's a problem for the society.
Do you want to add anything?
I was just going to say it's just so special to see our students. They come from so many different backgrounds getting together. I just think of the two little boys that have very different home lives, and they call each other bro. You know, they're just the best buddies. Just the kids teaching each other their languages. You know, our Spanish speakers correcting even me because my Spanish isn't great. You know, it makes sense.
Denise in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
Okay,
thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about how this program would help to diversify schools in areas that are largely poor right now, low-income areas now with little diversity in terms of income. It seems like it might diversify schools that were already wealthy, but how would that impact the South Bronx?
Yes, you want to take that?
Well, this pilot program only affects the 7 schools that applied for these changes. And these, you know, they do serve different populations. Some of them, you know, are considered very progressive schools. Maybe all of them are considered progressive schools, I guess, if they apply for this. But families do have to opt in. So families that are in very segregated areas don't know about the school or just happens, you know, been sending their kids to the neighborhood school, these schools that are part of the pilot program are going to have to recruit.
So new opportunities to get into new schools that select students by lottery, if nothing else.
That's right. That's right.
So it really wouldn't impact the South Bronx, for example. I mean, I think the
not
big
as
problem,
a whole.
Yeah. Seems like the big problem is residential segregation. And I don't think that there's really any...
That is part of the problem. that is something that the mayor has said repeatedly, too, in his response to why isn't there a broader policy to integrate, to better integrate the schools. And he has focused on housing and where people live. But there are many examples where lots of families in the same zip code are still going to very segregated schools.
Denise, thank you. Principal Zuckerman, you wanted to add something?
Yeah. This was the intent of this program is to diversify and integrate schools in low-income neighborhoods. What we've seen is that if you put if there is a popular school in a neighborhood that may be more distressed, people will travel. There, integration is not about taking kids from under-resourced neighborhoods and bringing them to more middle-class neighborhoods. This program is about keeping the schools that were brought into these neighborhoods, several of these schools are new schools, from flipping and being the bastion of the middle class.
And so, yes, as we start to run out of time, there seem to be two things going on at the same time now in the city. One is this pilot program that we've been discussing that just got announced. The other is what's going on in Dumbo and Vinegar Hill, where because of gentrification, more mostly white, more affluent families are moving into the PS8 zone, maybe making that school overcrowded. So they wanted to move some of those kids to the school down the road, PS307, which is mostly lower income kids of color but has room. And both communities have been resistant. The white families, many of them don't want their kids to go into the, you know, lower income, lower performing on tests school that's mostly kids of color. The families of color don't want to be sort of colonized and gentrified, so they might have to leave. That's a whole other situation and there that
is,
we've talked about so many times. And there's
It certainly relates. And especially, you know, this proposal is official now, by the way. The city made its official rezoning proposal.
So this is new since we last did a segment.
It's new. Yeah, it was expected and it's happened. And in that proposal, the DOE did say they proposed to set aside 50% of the seats at PS 307 for students that qualify for free and reduced price lunch. However, that proposal would still be secondary to zoned students. And so, you know, if the neighborhood sort of changes the way people expect, all the Dumbo parents and the Vinegar Hill parents will start to accept the school and they'll be in the zone. And so this 50% set aside may not really do anything. It might be an empty proposal. But it just goes to show that people are asking for some kind of policy. You know, as the head of this parent council that votes on the rezoning said, if you're looking to this rezoning proposal to solve a school's or a city's diversity problems, it's going to be very unsatisfying. You're looking in the wrong place, and there needs to be different policies.
And the analogous situation on the Upper West Side? Something got canceled there, right?
Well, they withdrew their proposal entirely. The city withdrew its proposal to rezone, at least for this year, for this upcoming year. So they might come up with a different proposal next year. But certainly there was a lot of disagreement on the Upper West Side over how to do it and how to get enough community buy-in.
So how are they going to deal with the overcrowding in PS 199 if it's got more kids than seats who now live in the zone?
That's a good question. Those kids will be on a waiting list and may or may not get a seat and would have 191 as a choice still.
Yasmeen Khan, WNYC education reporter. Julia Zuckerman, the principal of the Castlebridge School, PS 513, which will be partaking in the pilot program. And Krista Williams, parent coordinator at PS 513 in Washington Heights. Thank you all so much for joining us on the complicated issue of school diversity in New York City. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, The Devil's Financial Dictionary, author Jason Zweig, on the words they use on Wall Street and what they really mean. Stay with us.